beautiful in itself. The universe is beautiful. The flower is beautiful. Strange creatures that we do not understand are still beautiful also. And the world that we can create is one of beauty. And we can express our love of deity by serving beauty and producing beautiful things. Beauty, therefore, has a redeeming factor. Plotinus, in his essay on the beautiful, points this out very clearly. That next to the very breath of divinity, the presence of beauty is a benediction. That it is something that should always be thought about and cultivated. Therefore, every individual should variously attempt to beautify his life, his mind, his emotions, his home, and whatever elements come under his control. The neglect of beauty, the neglect of self-respect for order, symmetry, pattern, all these things disintegrate our integrities or reduce them. And once we have begun to slip into negatives, we can slide very easily the rest of the way. So one thing we must do is to find ways of expressing the new emotions and feelings that we have developed. If we want to do something, if we really love humanity, we will go out and help someone. We won't just simply do the same old things we've always done and feel that the attitude is sufficient. It is not. No virtue is really a proven virtue until it is used. To do something that brings joy, comfort, peace, or security to others. Every bit of selfishness, therefore, violates the rules of integrity. So we have all kinds of choices. There are things, music is a good choice, art, the dance, architecture, photography, all kinds of art, hobbies, crafts, and all types, ceramics and wood carving, fabrics, all the things in this world which imply beauty and are made from a conscientious desire to express something within ourselves that is going to be beautiful and produce happiness. We have here in the library a large collection of folk material created by primitive people. We may or may not think these primitive people are great artists, but if we go through the products of these persons, most of whom cannot read or write, have never had a lesson at all, have only used little local things that they have available to themselves. From this kind of talent has arisen works of art that equal anything done by Michelangelo or Leonardo da Vinci. Art is the expression of the longing for beauty within the self, is fulfilled by the expression of the best that we know, trying to express something that is locked within our own souls, and we are trying to get it out. And it is very important that everyone who wants to improve character should find some way of doing things that make life warmer, more gentle, and will create appreciation by others. Maybe the appreciation of others is simply a kind of little human reaction that we enjoy, but it's not too seriously bad to be appreciated if we do something worth appreciating. It all rests with us. So wherever we want to find a more warm and gentle and kindly way of life, we must try to build it in to our daily happenings so that in little ways we become exponents of these moods of more gentle thoughtfulness. After you go a ways in Eastern religion, perhaps, or in practically any of the esoteric schools, either of the ancient or modern world, we also pass beyond the period of meditation into something else. we pass gradually into the internal experience of universal citizenship. We suddenly realize that we are not little ants of some kind tied to a small planet. We are not just something that's floating around in space on a molehill. There's much more to life than this. As we begin to unfold our own inner resources, we discover that the universe inside of us is more vast and more wonderful than the one outside of ourselves. If we go deeply enough into self, we will also discover the deepest parts of infinite space. Within the individual is a great universal mystery, a mystery that we were created to solve, a way of life which we must find and live with to fulfill our destiny. And if we do not pay any attention to this now, if we feel that it's much more important to buy a few stocks and bonds and buy a bigger swimming pool, then we will come back sometime and may have to swim in the ruins of our own swimming pool. Actually, this tremendous universal experience is something. It suddenly reminds us that we are part of a divine purpose, that each of us was predestined and foreordained to a ministry of universal redemption. We are here to do things. We are here to make the world more beautiful. We are here to prove that love is real and that it is not subject to all kinds of temptations and ulterior motives. We are here to become harmless, and in being harmless, gain the greatest possible strength, the strength of infinite virtue. So we have to try to get this idea of citizenship into our system. If we decide or resolve that we can't change ourselves in this life, then we have to recognize the fact that what we cannot do will be done to us. We will change. If we have to pass through the grave and into another embodiment in order to change, that is the way it will be. But change we will. And sometimes a new life is a new chance to get away for a while from all the mistakes we made in the past. But the fact that we get away from them doesn't mean we've cured them. So our new embodiment is burdened with a lot of unfinished business. And this unfinished business is perhaps most clearly defined as evidenced by disposition, temperament, and character. That basic something in ourselves that seems to move us in one direction or another is actually, in large part, that voice of unfinished business which we have brought forward from the past. Now, we've brought forward a lot of nice things, too. We've not come down through the hundreds of embodiments that lead to the present time without accomplishing something. There are a great many very gross failures that we have corrected. There are nice things that we have done which are not forgotten by time or space. There are all kinds of new opportunities, and we bring to each embodiment the mellowed experience of previous life. The incidents we have forgotten, but the rules that have been kept and broken we remember. And these rules we either keep or break again. So each person who really wants to get somewhere must realize that that temper fit, which may be gone in a couple of hours, is a little scar in the substance of character. It is simply something that shouldn't be there. And if this is allowed to develop into a tendency to have these moods whenever it seems convenient, that little scar becomes a deep wound, and the inner life of the individual is not going to forget it. The inner life is scarred by habits and practices which have been allowed to accumulate without correction. So we come into the world, and from the time we are 2 years old, we are fretful. We are not a particularly pleasant or happy baby. And as soon as we get a little older, we discover that with a tantrum we can get what we want. And we've learned that from the past. And we have forgotten, however, what the temper fit did to us. We have forgotten the misery that it caused, the tragedy that it brought into previous lives. All that came forward this time is the uncorrected tendency to it. That impulse to do it again. That impulse to do as we please at the expense of others. And this, as if it's allowed to grow, will gradually infect the life as it infected the one before. Perhaps the parents come into this a little bit. We help to pay for our own mistakes by helping other people who get into the problem of making mistakes themselves. A wise, thoughtful, and fully responsible parent, seeing dispositional peculiarities that are adverse to a good and happy life, can always start in and work with it a little bit. Try to find out how to handle it. Try to present the child with new incentives to get over these indulgences in childish feudings and so on. Maybe the parent can't do it, but there's a good chance they can if they start early enough. But if the parent goes merrily on its way and never pays any attention to the children until they're 16 or 18 years old and suddenly wakes up and finds he's got delinquents, this is karma. This is the fact of life. And somewhere in the world we have to learn that all of the things that come as responsibilities must be met in full, or we will have to pay again. So every attitude in the person, character, and disposition which is contrary to intelligent, dedicated growth, and contrary to the improvement of the entire life cycle, will ultimately be the source of grief or distress to us in our later days. We cannot escape these things. They're there. And they will haunt us unless we correct them. Now, this may make life look awfully heavy. It's not nice to think that we go to school all the time. Well, it depends a lot on what the school is. It is said that before he made a slight mistake, Adam attended in the school of the angels. And that when he wasn't a very apt pupil, he caused difficulties to all concerned. But actually, nature's education is not hard. It is not a brutal thing. It is not something which says, thou shalt not forever. Nature's way of educating us is to give us a beautiful world in which to live. Nice people to get along with, if we are reasonably patient. Opportunities for all kinds of constructive experiences. Abilities to develop talents and resources within ourselves. The right to choose to grow. The right to grow like the flower in the field naturally, because it is its nature to grow. It is the nature of the human being to grow. It is the nature of the human being like the flower to be beautiful. It is the nature of the human being to be kind and generous and thoughtful. All these things are part of the beauty of life, not some hard rule in which we are going to be punished if we do wrong. The more thought is, we will be rewarded if we do right. And if we have troubles, it's because we have caused them, not because nature has wished them upon us. It is because we have not chosen to be happy in a world in which happiness is possible. A happiness, at least a very complete contentment, by means of which we can live a life that is useful, constructive, meaningful, and do all the better things we want to do without falling victim to the negative aspects of our own disposition. The only way we can really overcome a bad dispositional fault is in ourselves, and not permitting ulterior motives to focus upon that fault. In old days, they always thought that demons and evil spirits were tempting human beings to make mistakes. We've kind of gotten over that point of view, however. we've realized finally that it's not necessary to have demons to help us make mistakes. We can do a good job of it all by ourselves. But we still like to blame something. And when it reached the point where we couldn't blame the devil, and we couldn't blame demons that were supposed to lurk under the front doorsteps of the houses, then we had to find someone else. We had to have a scapegoat. There had to be some reason why we did wrong. And it just couldn't be ourselves that's to blame. So in the development of a scapegoat, we have gradually developed the process of transferring the causes of our discontent to those around us. We're going to blame one relative for one thing and another for something else. We are going to avoid very carefully the recognition that the ability to succeed in spiritual matters rests entirely in our own keeping. The parable of Jesus walking on the waters has been used in a number of metaphysical systems as a representation of the Christ Spirit in man walking upon the storm and walking where no ordinary person can walk. And that in walking upon the waves, it means that the enlightened soul can walk upon the corruptions of life without drowning, without being controlled or directed by the infirmities that arise in our daily living. So we can all walk upon the waters of our own problems. We can say to the oceans, "Be still," and they will be still. We can say to our own hearts, "Be still," and know that I am God. These things can happen. Until they happen, we're all going to be in trouble. And it's too bad if we can't grow enough to make sure that we get rid of most of our troubles in this life, at least. Maybe there was an old saying that was quite prevalent in India and among some of the schools that originated in India, that when the individual really was determined to do right, all his old bad karma was dumped on him at once. Because it seems that no one puts the rocks in the way of someone who isn't going anywhere. But the moment you go somewhere, you have to use resources that have strength behind them. If you want to suffer, you can stay just as you are and enjoy it if you can. And some do. But if you want to grow, you're going to be forced to face issues that you have previously carefully avoided. You are going to have to do things that you really did not want to do. So it is an idea that the moment you make a dedication, your troubles increase. This is not true. Dedication never caused a problem. But dedication can come into complex relationships with problems that you yourself have already caused. So if you want to grow, you have to have growing pain of some kind. Every child has it. They go through nervous tensions and all kinds of things trying to grow up. When we want to grow from a modern, present, immature level of life and thinking to a higher one, we have to face challenge. We have to discover that there is in ourselves something that doesn't seem to want to grow, that it wants to live its own peaceful life. In the famous Wagnerian opera of Siegfried, Fafner the giant, who was rewarded by Wotan by being given the treasures of the Nibelung, went into a cave and buried the treasures. And then Fafner the giant changed himself into a dragon and went to sleep at the entrance to the cave to guard his treasure forever. When Siegfried came along, the hero, to challenge this and to force the reluctant dragon to give up the treasures, the sleepy dragon just said, "Let me sleep, let me sleep." Well, many people, guarding their own troubles and their own misfortunes and their own weaknesses, when challenged, just say, "Leave me alone, let me rest, I don't want to work." I don't want to change. I just want other people to do what I want them to. So this way, this let me sleep attitude means leave me with the weaknesses I possess, but take away from me all the punishments for them. This can't be done. But as I remember several Hindu metaphysicians I knew years ago pointed out to me, namely that one of the signs of healthy growth is the fact that you're expected to be better than you were yesterday. Each day must be an advance, or this impulse of growth turns on itself and sours. The real part of growth, once you assume it, once you decide to live a better life, you have to stay with it, because if you fail, it was worse than it was before. But this victory is there. We are all here because in each of us is the eternal flame of divine life. We are here because we are sparks of a divinity that is eternal. We are here because that spark in us is clothed with a series of vestments, which we call sometimes bodies and sometimes veils. We have not only the spirit, but we have a soul nature, which is equivalent in the West to the Buddhist concept of Bodhi, the enlightener within ourselves, the soul. We have a mind of two levels and stratas, a mind of creative power and a mind of repetitive powers. We have emotions, which are both ideal and material. And we have a physical body, which is not a principle itself, but is a receptacle of all of these higher principles that function through it. So we live here with a visible body, which is the tail-end appendage of our complete natures. We live here with this inside power, the power of feeling, the power of thinking, the power of believing. And we have a tremendous energy equivalent with which to work. We have been given a body that is a very wonderful thing. One article I saw not long ago says that the human heart, by testing and checking, is able to outlast and outlive 7 expensive automobiles, each of which has been driven 100,000 miles. The heart would take that as just an ordinary job. This heart within us is unbelievable. It is something that gives us the right to make better decisions, the right to grow, the right to be wonderful people, the right to breathe, the right to have friends, to see nature, to do all the things that would make beauty. And yet now we are beginning to realize from psychotherapy and various psychological conditioning systems that we can cut down the endurance of the heart by nearly half by negative thinking alone. Criticism sickens the heart. Pleasure, joy, reward, gratitude strengthens the heart. So even the body has to pay for the mistakes of the thing that lives in it. And because of this, we don't realize that a large part of the vitality of life is wasted trying to avoid work. Next, we have the emotional nature with its various factors and elements to consider. We have emotions that run all the way from idealistic spiritual convictions to the most corporeal passions and fears and hates. The emotional nature is also, however, a beautiful thing in itself, and it carries the karma very largely that results from the failure of the power that lives in that body. So the emotions, if they're allowed to run without control, and in all sorts of extravagances and luxuriousnesses, it becomes a problem in which the person finally kills themselves with their own luxuries. We read in the papers every day of some wealthy person who passes out in his 50s from exhaustion. this type of emotional pressure and the corruptions and intemperances of emotional excess destroy life and also result in a lot of bad karma in most cases. Then we have the mental nature. The mental nature is rather heroic. It likes to be very self-centered. It likes to think how great it is, how great an importance the individual is who has privilege to have this particular mind. And the result of that, it goes off into all kinds of misuses of mental energy, all the way from black magic up to exploitation, war, ambitions that lead to the destruction of values. All these things we have to fight with or do something about. We really don't fight them, because there's nothing that wins a victory over emotions, thoughts, attitudes, energy fields, and all these things. Nothing wins a greater victory more rapidly than quietude. At peace with self is the most important thing the person can achieve. And in order to be at peace with themselves, they have to respect themselves. They have to know that what they are doing and how they are doing it is acceptable in the sight of that which is within themselves. They also have to realize that they must fulfill the burdens and responsibilities which they have assumed in life, not to regard them as burdens, but to regard them as opportunities. Every problem that confronts us is an opportunity to grow. It is a chance to be bigger now than we were yesterday. It is a chance to solve something. And perhaps most of all, it is a chance to learn something. When Francis Bacon, as the principal exponent and founder of the modern scientific approach to knowledge, pointed out on one occasion that there are three or four ways in which knowledge can be accumulated. And the most important of these is experience. Experience can be anything from the farmer in the field to the technician in the laboratory. Experience is the privilege of knowing for certainty that various causes have inevitable effects. Experiences tell us what we can do and what we cannot do. And all of the great scriptures of the world were based upon the experiences of prehistoric human beings, or perhaps visitors from larger and more friendly worlds. But experience is the great teacher. Experience will tell us when our stomachs are not being treated properly. Experience will tell us when we offend our children. Experience will tell us when we vote for the wrong candidate. Of course, this is a little intangible because they don't always have a candidate worth voting for. But we do the best we can. This is one of the intangible uncertainties that Bacon, I think, would probably say requires laboratory research. That is, they must keep on experimenting until they find out that which is good. But in all ways, we have ways of growing and learning, and we do have ways of getting away from the parts of ourselves that we can't get along with very well. We can get our minds off of ourselves. The individual who is all wrapped up in himself has been described as a very small package, and that's what he is. It is perfectly possible for us to become so much more interested and involved in important things that we have no longer time to spend all our energy trying to please our own egos. It's not necessary for us to just go along doing things that don't mean much, but there's always ways in which we can learn to make better use of the powers that we have. We can get our minds off of ourselves by involving our minds in educational projects. Now, in education, there's a little question as to what constitutes education. We're not entirely sold on educators at the moment. I remember noting in a paper, I don't remember where, and I'm not going to be quoted, but the substance is good just the same, that a certain university professor wrote a textbook for his class. and the work had so much profanity and pornography in it that it was not fit to be published. Now, this is something in education. But we do know there are certain forms of education that can always have a certain utility. Any education that brings people together is important. And one of these is language. The more we can think and understand other people, the sooner our problems will become less. So if we want to do something, to learn something, learn how to talk with a neighbor from another land. Try to understand life, and having learned some of the language, maybe go and visit the country. This is an opportunity to open doors of friendship. There is nothing competitive about learning another language. We either have aptitude or we don't. But whatever it is, we can do something to bring each other together in some form of compatible relationships. Another very interesting form of work, naturally, is the study of comparative religion. If we study comparative religion, we do not need to take the attitude that we have to be the center of the stage. Comparative religion should help us all to have a better bank of strength references by which we can direct our own activities. By comparative religion, we can heal in our own hearts the wounds that competitive nations are not able to heal geographically in these days. We are getting a very bad misunderstanding of religions due to the fact that most people in various countries are not living them. There is no such a thing as a religion that really believes in hate. There are a great many that practice it, but the actual fact of every religion is that the final end of man is to make peace with humanity and find final emancipation through the love of deity. These kind of things help to give us something a little more important to think about than our own grievances. Then we can develop various service fields that will help. Broken homes need someone to help them. Working families need someone to watch children. All kinds of opportunities arise to be of service. And an hour of service is more important than a month of fretting. A little effort to do things that some way are an echo of this character within us, giving the best part of ourselves an opportunity to reveal its own natural gentleness, kindness, and affection. If we can do some of these things, life will be a lot easier for all concerned. And if enough people do these types of things, there'll be no more wars. Wars are merely nourishing hates and ambitions and selfishness. Wars are built up by false values which are negative and produce nothing that is any good. To just have one moment of gentle insight and understanding will bring more peace to this world than a world of wars. We have to find the healing areas, and in every individual, the best part of himself, the deepest part of himself, is also his great physician. Many of the maladies of today and of other days are simply the result of thoughts and emotions that have gone sour and have afflicted the body as well as the mind and emotions. Many, many psychiatrists are working all the time with people who really are destroying themselves by nursing grievances. Get out of this habit entirely. Decide definitely that you're going to look back and remember some of the good things that happened. And if you sincerely believe you can find a good thing somewhere in the past, it's high time you made up one right now and got to work on it. If you haven't any good memories now, make some so you can have them in the future. But get rid entirely, as much as humanly possible, of every negative attitude, and get rid of trying to pass on responsibilities to other people. You will find other people will be more friendly and you will like them better if you don't keep on accusing them of being responsible for your faults. That's liable to prove unpleasant to the individual you are accusing. Keep these things straight, and most of all, start out by forgiving your enemies, being sincere to your friendships, and to live as far as possible, mentally, emotionally, and physically, without ulterior motives, dedicated to the fact that we're here to learn, to love, and to live. And by following these rules, we'll do pretty well in this world, in spite of the troubles that we find around us. Well, thank you very much, folks. That's all for today.